Welcome to Counterpressed on The Ringer and Spotify. I'm in the studio with Jessie Parker Humphreys, fresh from their race across the world. Boston, Barcelona, New York, global.
Not quite in that order, but yes, I am. I came back from Barcelona yesterday after my lovely holiday. Had a great time. Loved it. Loved New York. Boston, it was a tough time out there, but we got through it.
Well, it was brief and it was bookended by a tough run, right? So that's kind of your lasting memory, was how much pain you were in.
I saw more of the suburbs of Boston than I did Boston, the city itself. But, you know, my girlfriend was looking up the route, because I found the marathon very hard, was looking up the route to like try and G me up and be like, you're going to see this really cool thing. And she was looking at Google Maps and she was just like, there is nothing cool to see.
What about this war memorial?
Literally, she was like, there's a hospital.
I want to get onto that in a min on Boston itself. But you will realise now there is no Jilly Flatty in the studio with us.
Pathetic. Flo, was I not in the studio the day after I ran London Marathon?
You were, but you also trained for many, many months. And Jilly did 3 weeks training in the end? Something like that.
I think four.
Four. And she put her body through hell. And I think we were optimistic to think that she might come in and understandably got a message this morning saying, I'm in so much pain mentally and physically.
It's probably as much the marathon as the fact that she worked Lyon PSG the day before.
And had about 4 hours sleep.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know how the girl did it. She is superhuman. She did it in 6 hours, 10 minutes.
It's a great time. It's a great time. It's very proud.
Unbelievable. Let's hear how it went down from the woman herself. Jilly sent us a little voice note this morning.
So I just wanted to give you an update on the marathon. Yes, I completed it. I finished it in 6 hours and 10 minutes, I think it was. So under 4 weeks of training, probably 3 weeks of training, 2 15K runs, which was my max that I'd run, and a couple of 6 to 10 Ks maybe chucked in there. But yeah, it was good fun. It was, I was proud and pleased to finish it. My body is broken now though. There's muscles that I didn't even know existed. It's hurt, I'm hurting, I'm struggling to walk. But I just want to say a massive thank you to everyone who has sponsored. We're nearly at the target of 2,000 for the Stroke Association. So yeah, I appreciate all the lung support. But that is a one-time thing. I'm doing it. I'm never, ever doing it again. Mark my words.
I don't know how she did it. Unbelievable from Jilly to get through it. I know she was struggling for a lot of the run. And she was saying she was taking it slow, seeing family, really soaking it all in. But she got through it.
It's amazing. I mean, it's a tough, tough thing to do. And it's a very long way to go. And I sometimes think, like, doing it slower. I felt like I had this experience at Boston. But when you're doing it slower, it just feels so much longer, because in your head, you know, this is going to take hours and hours and hours. Like when you run it quite fast, you're like, at least it's not too long. But she did it.
Well, so talk to us about Boston, because it wasn't one of your best.
No, in fact, it was the worst of the three.
And it was a shame because we had so many people tracking you.
No, but I have to say, I have to firstly shout out the various Counterpressed fans who were on the course. Shout out to the legends who were at mile one, which was when I was looking at my best. So that was great. But there was definitely a point where I thought, I'm going to have to quit. And I was like, you can't, because so many people are tracking you and it will be so embarrassing.
So it was actually good because it kept you going.
Yeah, there's nothing like peer pressure, internet peer pressure to force you to go. But yeah, it was, I probably came into it a little bit undertrained anyway. And I knew that. And I wasn't going for a PB because it's a very tough course, very hilly. But then the sun just got me.
It was a hot one out there.
Yeah, it was 18 degrees and just like bright sunshine. There's no shade on the course. And like 18 degrees, I guess, isn't that hot. But when you've trained through a British winter, I probably hadn't done a single run at a temperature above 12 or 13. Mm. And it really, really affects your body. Especially like the first, I've had this just experience just before, like when spring comes around and you'll go and do a run and you'll be like, oh my God, I can't run anymore. And it's just because you haven't run in the heat for that. And it's just unfortunate that that happened on the day. But also, like, I'm very proud of myself that I got it done, because at mile 10, I was like, I cannot do this.
Yeah, you had a bit of a crisis.
I had a crisis, found my girlfriend, but that made me feel better. And then I was like, look, you did not fly all the right way around the world to not finish this marathon. I knew my friend Ashna was at mile 25 and I was like, you can't not see Ashna. And I was like, why the fuck is she so far away? Why couldn't she be at mile 12? So I just knuckled down. But yeah, that was the point where I was like, I have to run 16 more miles and I feel awful. But I was just like, just got to do it.
Just got to do it.
I walked through all the water stations. That was great. Need to shout out the girl at mile 16 who just had her garden hose out, hosed me down. That was amazing. That was beautiful.
Love that.
That was like my best moment. And I got there in the end. 3 hours, 55 minutes. It's pretty, pretty pleased with that
stuff. It's still very good for someone that nearly dropped out entirely mid-race. Talk to us about the experience though, because it is such a famous race and I know you're really hyped for it and it is the most prestigious marathon race in the world, as much as obviously we love London as Londoners. And London Marathon is such a beautiful day. I cried at the coverage yesterday. It's just really moving. And to know that Jilly was pushing through so hard was amazing as well. But Boston is the marathon. So did it live up to expectations? Did you see the famous dog as well? That's what a lot of us want to know.
Okay, I didn't see the dog statue because loads of people had signs for the dog statue. And then there were tons of golden retrievers all weekend. Saw golden retrievers everywhere, which I love because they are my favourite dog.
Yeah, they're cute.
But then I didn't see the statue itself. I think people must have been standing in front of it. So, yeah.
So it's quite a small statue.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, it wasn't a big one. I can't tell you because I didn't see it. But I like seeing the actual dogs was almost better.
Yeah.
And every time I saw a golden retriever, it made me feel happy. Boston itself, it was amazing. I think I found it hard mentally as well, slowing down so much because there's obviously a sense of like, you get to run Boston because you're fast and everyone there is fast, which isn't technically true. There are like charity runners who don't do it as fast, but like so much of it is about getting the qualifying time and getting to get in. So I think there was an element of me being like, oh, like you kind of let yourself down because you've not been able. But also loads of people had the same experience as me. I saw like a number of people who said very similar to me. They set out to sort of run in that 3 hours to 3 hours 30 mark and just lost a huge chunk of time because they had to slow down. So that's my positive mental attitude around it. But yeah, the course itself, as I say, it's not like London at all because London is so iconic. You know, like when you're going sort of Cutty Sark, Tower Bridge, when the like London Eye comes into view, like as you get onto Embankment and stuff, Big Ben as well, like all that's so amazing. But Boston has like, it's not about like the sights, it's almost about the course. Mm. And like Heartbreak Hill, I kind of almost enjoyed because I was going so slow or like so much slower than I thought I would. It almost wasn't like hard because I was like, if you're finding it too hard, just stop and walk.
How hilly is it? Is it really big incline?
Yeah, it is a big incline. But to be honest, and I did know about this. Everyone says this. It's like Heartbreak Hill's a bit of a misnomer because it makes it sound like there's just one hill, but the whole course is just up and down. And like Heartbreak Hill is like, there's a couple of hills before it, which I actually found almost harder. And it's the downhills that were killing me because my legs were just gone. And it's really hard to run downhill when your legs are like jelly. But the Wellesley College girls, they were amazing. They're very famous for having signs saying to kiss them. And me and Ashna...
It's a very gay university, isn't
it? Well, me and Ashna were talking before being like, how do you know who's gay or who's straight? No need to worry. The girls had Kiss Me, I'm a Lesbian signs.
Very good.
So I was like, well, that's handy. I did not partake. But then, yeah, Heartbreaker was amazing. And then the famous bit is the right at the very end, you turn right on Hereford Street and left on Bolston Street. And when I got to there, I was like, I cried at that point.
And that's like the last couple of miles.
That's like the last, like, hot, like quarter of a mile,
right.
And it's very famous that that's like the end. And a woman like shouted out, being like, "Right on Hereford, left on Boston, we've got this." And I was like, "I'm so happy to be finishing."
God, honestly, I've never done a marathon, and I don't think I could. I've done two halves, and I'm committed to do another one later this year. I want to do the big half. But I remember when I did a half marathon, thinking I couldn't do that two times over. That was enough for me. So I commend anyone that takes on that distance. Oh, my days.
I will say I really recommend doing it at least once. It'll be interesting to see how Jilly feels. But I do think, like, as a Londoner, doing London Like, that maybe is worth one, it. Maybe that is really
day,
worth it.
Maybe one day. I just, honestly, I don't know how anyone does it. And we actually got a question from someone on Twitter saying, who's next for the marathon? Because we've had two in the space of 2 weeks. So Becky, Kate's sister's a very keen marathon runner. She unfortunately had to drop out of her race yesterday because she got really ill. But I don't think it's going to be me. I don't think it's going to be me. But you never know.
I think you're the most likely of the three to do it.
Do you think?
Yeah.
It's just so far. It's so long. We had some good other marathon questions as well. Emily Clayland, if all the WSL managers ran the marathon, who would win and who would sabotage who? So who would win? I'm trying to think of who we've got. Have we got any very athletic managers in the WSL? I feel like Carla Ward maybe be good at running.
Yeah, I was going to say Carla Ward and Gareth Taylor are probably the two who had the
Gareth
biggest.
Gareth Taylor loves running.
They had like the biggest football careers, really, didn't they? But I'll tell you who I think would take it really seriously, the kind of person who would just not stop talking to you about all their training, Jonas Iderville.
He would have all the gear. He'd have all the fresh Adidas gear for sure. He would look the part. And I think he'd have a really good training program, but I think something would just happen at the last minute and then he couldn't do it. He'd have to drop out. But I'm with you on Carla and Gareth. I think they... And then who would sabotage?
Emma Hayes sabotaging Jonas Iderville. Taking the battery out of his Garmin. Yeah. I don't know. I can imagine Mark Skinner would really give it the big one and then not do very well.
Yeah, we'd say I'm aiming for 3:30 and then get like 5 hours 15
yeah,
or something.
Exactly.
I think Matt Beard would do it. I think Matt Beard would do it, and he'd do it for an amazing charity and raise so much money.
Matt Beard would do it like in a fun costume.
Yes, and he'd be like the proper people's champ marathon runner, and he'd be on BBC because they'd be like, wow, Liverpool manager Matt Beard raised 50 grand for Alder Hey Hospital in Liverpool, and it'd be like, wow.
Can I tell you who I think would be really good? Brian Sorensen. Like an intensity to him.
Oh yeah, he does.
That I feel like really suits the marathon as a distance.
Okay. Well, if any WSL managers have or plan to, let us know.
Oh my God, yes, would love that.
We're now basically becoming a marathon
podcast. We should shout out Izzy Christensen because she was also doing it yesterday.
Do you know what time she got? Because I didn't actually look in the end.
Did I check to see if I had ever run a marathon faster than Izzy Christensen? Yes, I did. And yes, I have. I think she ran about 3:35.
Oh, that's impressive.
Wait
that's
a minute.
Really
I can get... No, sorry. I've done a dirty. 3:32 and 6 seconds. Very impressive.
Wow, that is
marathon
very
time.
Impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there were lots of people. Maisie Adam ran as well. She
yes, shout out.
3:46, so.
Whoa, that's quick. That's very her quick. First marathon as well, isn't it?
Yeah, very quick.
Wow, shout out Big Kick Energy's Maisie Adam. That is a big, big run.
I love tracking people running the marathon. I had like my long list of people I was keeping an eye on.
God, they were, and you see that in the coverage, the amount of celebs, man. People, I mean, raise so much money. Anyway, we must talk about some football, guys, because we know that people sometimes think we talk too much at the start of the show about non-football related things.
It's unfair that the marathon happened in a weekend where actually I do just want to talk about Chelsea rather than using to deflect.
Instead of the Chelsea press allegations, it's the marathon press allegations this weekend. So yes, on today's show, we're going to be talking about two UEFA Women's Champions League semi-finals, Barcelona-Chelsea, and the chaos that was Lyon PSG. So let's talk about it after this. So you came straight from your flight from New York.
Yeah, I flew New York to London Gatwick, went out through passport control and back through security and got on a flight to Barcelona.
And you had enough time in between. It wasn't a race against time.
I was worried because my flight was delayed by 3 hours. But as a top dad, I had obviously booked.
Giving yourself a big window.
Giving myself a big window to change onto.
And it was same terminal and everything. You didn't have to change.
It was very easy.
Wow. Smart. Smart behaviour. And so first thing I want to do is vibe check in Barcelona, because I know it's one of your fave cities. And I know I had my fever dream that 10,000 Chelsea fans went to Amsterdam, which I'll never live down. But the Chelsea fans at the Olympic Stadium were like sort of penned in a little corner. How many do you reckon? 200 more?
I don't know. I'm so rubbish at like estimating that stuff.
I mean, come on.
I mean, the away end, it was like, it wasn't like full, but it definitely felt like busy. Yeah, maybe like 200, 300. I'm not really sure.
And what were the vibes like? Good
vibes,
good crew.
Were great. Yeah. Great crew. Great energy.
I did hear definitely Basil.
Yeah, Barca fans at one point. Quiet, apart from when they had to whistle everything. That's all they could do, whistle. Yeah, it was obviously it was great because we won. Yeah, but it was really fun. And I think this year as a whole has been a really like amazing growth in that kind of like serious Chelsea away support. And like thinking about being at those Lyon and Barcelona games last year and how much it feels like it's come on, not just in like numbers, but like intensity, noise, friendships. Like, I think it's been really, really cool to see.
The friends we make along the way, eh?
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, let's talk about the game. Barcelona's first defeat at home since 2019. It is some feat to beat those guys in their own backyard. And we know that after their first Champions League victory, there was this aura around them, and that aura only really enhanced with Spain beating England at the World Cup and Bonmati taking that Ballon d'Or victory. And so there's this energy around them that always makes you think, oh, well, even a team on their best day can never beat Barcelona. Chelsea went in there with a playbook, having learnt so much, I think, in that second leg semi-final defeat last year, and sort of doubled down on that approach rather than, I think, doing what Emma Hayes sort of tricked herself into doing the first time, which was that final that they lost against Barcelona. I think that really messed with her head a little bit. But I think what we saw in this game was taking on the learnings of the semi-final defeat last season and then taking that one step further, but having the individual performances to deliver that game plan.
Yeah, I think one of Emma Hayes's like biggest strengths has always been her ability to iterate on a game plan. And, you know, when you think back to 2020-21 and when we reached Champions League final, what really stood out to me in that run was how in the first legs of every game, we really struggled and we just about managed to stay in those games. Some of that was tactical, some of that was like Sophie Ingle being sent off. but we reached the final because I felt like in every second leg, we had learned so much and adjusted our game plan to then get those wins over Wolfsburg and Bayern.
I will say in that run to the final, though, there was quite a lot of luck along the way.
That's what I mean. We were lucky in first legs where we didn't play very well, and then in second legs we played
a lot
better.
I see what you mean. Yeah. And
so I think it's like been really interesting when you look back on these four games against Barcelona. You've got the 4-0 in the final, the 1-0 to Barca at Stamford Bridge, the 1-1 at Camp Nou, and then to go and win 1-0. It like really neatly, I think, tracks that kind of development. And I think you're right. I think Chelsea focused a lot more on the midfield and the mid block, whereas maybe last year it felt like there was more of a focus on playing a lower block and playing, you know, defensively. But there were a lot of things that were also taken, sort of playing longer balls up to Myra Ramirez. That's something Chelsea did a lot with Sam Kerr last year, obviously going to the back three. That's also what Chelsea chose to do last year. And it just felt like, though, in midfield, there was a level of intensity that meant that Barcelona, I thought, looked pretty ordinary, to be honest. You know, I think it'd be one thing, and it would still feel as good, to be honest, if we came away with a smash and grab. But I think it was a pretty even game. Barcelona had some good chances that they couldn't take. And Chelsea also had, you know, more than just the Aaron Cuthbert goal, which they couldn't take. And I think that feels very, very satisfying. I'm still pretty convinced Barcelona might come to Stamford Bridge and trash us.
Well, we're going to talk about that in a minute. I thought Barcelona were really, really poor. And I think part of that is Chelsea's ability to shake them up a little bit in how they played defensively and physically, and to maintain that physicality for 90 minutes was really tough, because I was listening. So I watched the first half at home, shout out Flo Pollock on TNT comms, had to get in the car and go to Stockley Park. So I switched over to Vicky Sparks and Pat Nevin, shout out them on 5 Live. On 5 Live is main program as well, which I thought was brilliant, because it's, you know, coming up to a big end of season for the Premier League and EFL, but I really like the way that they prioritize analyse the comms of that game. Pat Nevin, obviously hilarious guy, big links to Chelsea, but I think he handled it quite well. I thought their coverage was brilliant, but it was really interesting because he kept saying, I don't know if Chelsea can keep this physicality and this energy going. Like, I think it's going to be really tough, even with running a few changes. I don't know how they not just physically, but mentally stay with Barcelona, because that's the issue for so many, is that they grind you down with the way that they play. But I thought that was mighty impressive to just stay in the game and keep it so tight and get to every block.
But I also think Barcelona lost their heads a little bit about it. And you can see
certainly
that
with the time wasting, they completely lost their heads.
You can see that in Aitana's comments afterwards. And I think, yeah, it's interesting Pat saying that, because I agree, and that was my feeling. And like, look, definitely Barcelona sort of had their best chance of that game in like the sort of final, that 10 minutes added on. But I did think there was an extent where they were like quite rattled by how Chelsea were playing. And it's funny because like, yeah, Chelsea time wasted, but like no more than I thought was particularly normal.
Well, no,
like,
no more than anyone time wastes ever.
Well, also, like, if you're Barcelona and you're making like stupid fouls that allow, which is what kept happening, which allow players to go down, that's like you're kind of being dragged into it yourself. And it did make me laugh because I get it. My head would also be on Mars if I was a Barcelona fan, but my head was on Mars at Camp Nou last year when it was 1-1 and they were doing exactly because that's football.
I was about to say, when your team are losing, and trust me, I've fully lost my head at Lotus Road, and you're watching Preston North End time waste 20 minutes of football, trust me, you're basically on the pitch at that point. We've all been there, and that's what rattles fans the most, is Mary Earps going down with a fake injury for 10 minutes in the FA Cup semi-final. Like, it's a classic.
We've all been there.
We've all been there.
But it's so satisfying to see that Spanish rattle.
Because Spain are, Spain were kind of the creators of this master a little art. But anyway, yeah, I thought Barcelona were really poor. And I know you said you thought they had good opportunities, but I thought they created so little in this game. There were those early chances where I thought, okay, if Jess Carter doesn't get that block, or there was one that I think Paralelo hit wide.
There's one moment as well where CGH, I think, sort of stumbles in the
box.
That
was it, yeah.
Yeah. Definitely those first 5 minutes, Chelsea needed that time to settle into the game. But then in the first half, Barcelona didn't have a single shot after the 20th minute.
Well, they had one shot on target in the whole game, which is, baffling. We rarely see that. So I think Barcelona just created so little as well, which, part of that is how poorly they played. But, that is also down to what Chelsea did as well. But yeah, it was really surprising. And that brings me then on to, how often did Barcelona do that? Twice. Because we will fully expect on Saturday a bombardment of Barcelona opportunities, because they will just keep going and going and going. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how the game goes on Saturday and how Chelsea deal with that onslaught.
Well, I think it's going to be a fascinating test for Giraldo's, because part of, what I know people feel like funny about Liga FA and how competitive it is and where would Barcelona finish, or how many games would they lose if they were in the WSL, and we're never going to be able to answer that question accurately, but
Women's,
I think it's fair to say,
European Super League, you heard it here first.
I think it's fair to say that clearly, regardless of where they'd finish in the WSL, they are much better than every team in Liga FA, and that means that obviously you develop as a team and a manager differently, and in the past that's clearly not hindered Barcelona in Europe. They've still been able to get, some fantastic results, although equally they've had moments where they've struggled. They lost the final to Lyon quite comprehensively, and even in that Wolfsburg game last year, they came back fantastically, but they were 2-0 down. There have been enough moments to show that some of those initial first halves in games, let's say, they've struggled with. Now, I think both against, especially against Wolfsburg last year, Giraldo's has been able to make the changes and adjustments that have allowed Barcelona to like come back and win games. And, he's a relatively young manager. And this is part of, I think, what will be so interesting to see him at the Washington Spirit, and to bring a like totally new style of football almost to that team. Because there is a sense where you're like, Barcelona as a side, they are led by Giraldo's, but how much is just like Barcelona and the concept of the football they like to play, and La Masia and the influence of Cortez on that team. And, I do think Giraldo's has developed this team in certain ways, but this is probably the most interesting, I'd say, like tactical, like switch that he might have to make. And I thought his changes in game were pretty surprising as well, which I guess it'll be interesting to see, like, whether he wants to persist with, for example, having Patry at centre-back and playing an Alexia Aitana Kira midfield. You know, Onabatia came off very early for Lucy Bronze, which really took me by surprise. And I think was probably the wrong decision, given how much
Bronze was getting
cooked. Allowed Chelsea to, like, take the ball out of the back. But then equally, Bronze gets the header that is for that amazing chance for Alexia at the end. So... yeah, I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see what he changes, because the onus is on him. But then also, like you're saying, how often do Barcelona have like two bad games? So will Hayes want to also make her own changes to create that sort of level of unpredictability? Because we saw Giraldo's at Lee Sports Village, right, for that United semi-final. And then Chelsea just turned up. Like, I could not have in a million years told you that Neve Charles would play left-sided centre-back in this match.
Well, so. I want to get into that in a minute, but we've had a question from Catherine Fay. What would you change in the Barca squad coming to Stamford Bridge? It's really interesting because I think there's so many mind games, and you sort of hinted it there, that could happen, because what does Emma Hayes do to try and sort of predict what Giraldo's might do? Would it make more sense to kind of stick to what worked, but then for Giraldo's, do you stick and hope that it comes good this time, or do you make some significant changes and go for broke? I thought Pateas did fairly well when she came on, but she misses that huge chance. That was a massive, probably one of their best chances of the game. Mm. And she misses that, which, like, when that comes, you just have to take it. That's all you're going to get. I thought Paralelo and Graham Hansen were fairly quiet for two of Barca's best players and difference makers, but they didn't have a lot of space often to work with. Graham Hansen looked like she was maybe going to have a big game when she was cutting inside and doing what we know she does best, but she got shut down by Ashley Lawrence and Neve Charles quite well for the rest of the game. So is there anything you think, if I were Barcelona manager, I would make those changes?
I don't know. I think it's tough, because I think some of the things that Barcelona was struggling with are things they don't necessarily have in the squad right now. Like, they've obviously been linked to buying Eva Payo, and I think that's like a profile of player who would be really useful for them in a Chelsea game where, you know, if Chelsea are going to look to stay sort of really compact, really tight, can you have that person who's going to maybe sort of hold the ball up a bit more and be just a bit more almost like brutish in the penalty area? And they don't have that profile of player right now. And obviously they chose to let Oshuala go, and she's also not quite that same kind of player. I kind of think she's probably more similar to like Salma in terms of being able to run off the back of defenders and things like that. So yeah, it's a tough one, and I guess there are sort of internal question marks. So for example, obviously Caroline Graham Hansen missed Norway, the internationals, and, you know, I'm like, was she just bad, or is she not quite fit? If so, will she be better? I think you play CGH regardless, to be honest. But like, that will be an interesting one, because if she wasn't fit, then you're like, the individual quality level on that side will just go up. I thought Mariona really struggled, and I don't know if Barcelona are interested in doing this, because I do understand why they play Rolfo and Ona at fullback. But part of me would be tempted to take the like Lucy Bronze risk and push Rolfo further up and play her on the left. But I do think you are then losing a lot by playing Lucy Bronze. That would make me stressed.
Play Lucy Bronze at left back and push Rolfo
right back, right, and then back. Play Honor at left
play
back.
Honor at left back. Okay, and then push Rolfo higher. I mean, Rolfo didn't look great on Saturday, and that's not really surprising, because she is the weakness in that back line. And you can see how Chelsea, you know, like targeted that a little bit. And I thought in the build up to the goal, you see how out of position everyone sort of drifts, and Chelsea kind of create that opportunity sort of out of nothing by putting the pressure on. It's a poor pass from, who is that?
Paredes. Myra like holds up the ball, and like Paredes passes it to Lawrence, basically.
Yeah, passes it straight to Lawrence, and then Lawrence recycles it, and it's some really good individual work from Nusken and Cuthbert to finish the opportunity, but it kind of comes from nothing. Barcelona sort of getting
into
their own mess.
It actually comes from an offside flow, and Barcelona fans are very upset about that. Even though it was about four phases of play before the goal.
I don't want to talk about that. But yeah, it's. I think it's surprising to see such a sort of, I guess, error-ridden Barcelona side where things aren't clicking.
See, this element of it doesn't really surprise me because I think Barcelona have always been, like, especially without Mapi Leon, like defensively.
Oh, defensively,
they're always going to have those moments. And I think it was always just a question of like, can Chelsea capitalize on them? But also, can you make sure you don't then, as a result of trying to capitalize on them, concede a load of space or just like be overwhelmed? You know, that was Wolfsburg's problem. Like, it's like you can go two goals up, but like Barcelona will just sort of score at will as the game goes on. And so, that's why I think it would be interesting to see. I feel like just that's why I'd be tempted if I was Barcelona to try and play a natural wide player on the left, because felt like Chelsea was so focused on compacting that midfield space, which is where Barcelona players like to operate. And, you know, if you've got someone like Mariona, that's what she's going to try and do. And it's funny because in the fixture last year, it was when Mariona kind of came on that the game felt like it really tilted towards Barcelona even more, because Chelsea weren't prepared to sort of deal with that player coming inside. And it felt like they were just a bit more switched on to that. So yeah, I mean, that would definitely be one option. But I think it's always been true that, yeah, Barcelona, there are frailties there.
Well, if you're playing Ingrid Engen at centre-back, it's rarely going to be
right when your choice at centre back is Ingrid Engen or Patrick Guiaro. Like, I know Patrick obviously played there for the Champions League final against Chelsea. So, but I actually thought she, watching the game back, I thought she struggled a lot more with Ramirez as the game went on, and I thought that was kind of interesting because again, those sort of defensive changes maybe allowed Chelsea to hold the ball up a lot more than they would have been able to, and meant they weren't under the sort of consistent pressure.
One thing I want to talk about, because this result came out of absolutely nowhere, and that's why, you know, it feels even more bizarre, because we had a question from Bella Rose: is it now proven that Chelsea women need absolute chaos before a game in order to win? So in the lead up to this, we've had Emma Hayes's sort of bizarre press conference farewell tour, where she's been saying all sorts of wild things, reading poems, chucking a few players under the bus. We have Anne Kretschmann-Bergen leaving midweek to join
Sold
Gotham.
Sold literally the day before the game.
Sold the day before the game. We've had some really poor performances.
I'm not contractually obliged to talk about the Manchester United game because I was in Boston.
Well, you're lucky you dodged a bullet there because you were away, so you didn't have to talk about that. But some really, really bad performances. And then out of nowhere, the most unexpected result. And just when we thought Emma Hayes was kind of at her worst, she somehow pulls this out of the bag. And that's what feels so bizarre, is to have a game like this come when I don't think anyone... And I remember you saying, like, on the basis of some of these recent performances, like, I don't see us having a great chance in Barcelona.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, logic would have suggested that we didn't. You know, if Manchester United can score twice against you, you'd assume Barcelona would be able to score more. But, like, look, also, it's the cliche, but, like, it is a first leg. And, you know, it's a tough one because I'm like, it's an amazing result. And I think it will always feel like an amazing result. It was fantastic to be there. I was literally buzzing. But if you go and lose the second leg and you don't reach the final...
What's the point?
It's kind of for nothing. Mm-hmm. So... I do think there is an extent to which Chelsea not necessarily thrive off chaos, but I think they're a team that always have the ability to pull like a ridiculous performance out the bag. I kind of felt the same one about the Arsenal result at Stamford Bridge. And sometimes I just wonder if maybe they do just need like a little bit of extra focus. And, you know, I've kind of criticised, or not criticised Hayes, but like was questioning sort of Hayes because she's done a lot of this, you know, some teams just want it more element, you know, that it's hard to like consistently qualify for finals. It's hard to consistently win things sort of in relation to the Arsenal Conti Cup and the United FA Cup game. And I don't think, you know, there's anything wrong per se with her saying that. You know, I do think there's elements of truth to it, but I think the nature of the way she was saying it just felt like so like, what can we do? And I'm like, well, you could play better in these games. I don't include the Conti Cup final on that because I thought Chelsea were fine. But maybe there is also a truth for Chelsea that, you know, it's not that they don't want to win the FA Cup or the Conti Cup, but they really want to win the Champions League and they really want to beat Barcelona. And maybe that's just what helps the players like get up for it in that little bit more. Because as much as I thought, you know, tactically, Hayes got it spot on. You know, the reason she gets it spot on is because everyone plays like out of their skin. You know, Carter, Lawrence, Charles, Gadarid, like Ramirez, it was easily her best game for Chelsea. All three of the midfielders were like fantastic. You know, I think it was clear that for the players, as much as they were being put in a system that like worked, they were able to like push on in that little bit more.
And that's why it's going to be even harder sometimes to deliver that again. That's why I think it's going to be really interesting.
I think the opportunity to knock Barcelona out of the Champions League is more than enough motivation.
Oh, I think it's enough motivation, but I mean, just like physically and mentally, to deliver two perfect performances is really tough.
Yeah,
it's really
tough. I know Hayes was sort of like scoffing a bit about the fact that we had to play Villa before going to do this, but the fact that we don't have a midweek game, I think, is really important. And Barcelona do.
Villa's goalkeeper was sent off in the first 5 minutes, so you got a favour there.
Thank you, Annelied. Yeah, Barcelona do. So, I mean, that's kind of like interesting. I mean, I don't really know whether it has to matter at all, but you have to sort of get ready and go and play a game still.
They're already champions, aren't they?
I think not technically, but I'm like, you still have to like prepare. You can't just not go.
No, we're forfeiting this game.
That would be hilarious. I'd respect that, actually.
But there is arguably more pressure on Chelsea in the WSL context than there is on Barcelona right now. But I don't think fully focus still.
Yeah, I just think it helps when you know you've got a week to prepare. You just train differently. You know, if you have to do like stuff going into it. I mean, maybe Jonathan will just give everyone day off and play the B team. I did like that Vicky Lopez came on. I thought Vicky Lopez was actually much better than I expected to be when she came on, and then went and played their Barca B game the next day.
I saw that. I mean, when you're that young, you can do it all.
I know. I thought it was a bit crazy.
Well, we'll talk more ahead of that game on Saturday, on Thursday's show. So we'll preview it a little bit, and obviously very excited. But let's talk about the other semi-final, Lyon PSG, next. This was a bizarre, bizarre game, right? So it looked like it was going to be a pretty impressive smash and grab from PSG. And then somehow in 10 minutes, Lyon pulled off a pretty incredible limbs comeback at home in front of a good crowd as well, because I think over the years we've kind of laughed at, despite Lyon's absolute dominance and brilliance in the Women's Champions League, they still seem to have no fans. But it was a decent turnout and the vibes looked great. The celebrations were so good. And I was just like, how have PSG chucked this away? I mean, neither team played particularly well. The defending was abysmal, but it was lots of fun to watch at times. And it was so weird because Lyon really dominated this game. They didn't have less than 50% possession, apart from a brief 15-minute spell between the hour mark and the 75th minute. Apart from that, they dominated on the ball. They had 22 shots, some decent opportunities, some real speculative. There were a lot in the first half. There was a lot of pot shots from outside the box where they were thinking, oh, one of these might drop. But both teams were playing really direct. It felt like watching an NWSL game, actually, at times. It was a lot of territory, just like kicking long, going out for a throw, and then seeing how you can use the throw. And then Katoto gets this goal so against the run of play, but it's a nice finish to put a PSG 1-0 up going into the break. And then she gets another goal just after half time. And I'm thinking, oh, well, Lyon have just screwed this up now. But PSG masters of their own downfall. And it was a really impressive comeback.
Yeah, when PSG was 2-0 up, I was like, God, the Lyon manager must be rubbish. I wonder where she's going next year.
Well, we haven't haven't actually talked about that because that news was announced, well, pretty much confirmed because Chelsea haven't officially confirmed it, but lots of journalists confirmed it and we'd been waiting for it while you were away. So we haven't talked about that. But what I will say is a bit of a like-for-like replacement. Blonde white woman who likes wearing hoodies with jackets. I mean...
No, sorry. Sonia's hoodie and blazer combo is absolutely criminal.
I've seen Emma Hayes do that several times.
I don't know if I've ever seen her do it with like a blazer like that.
Oh, yeah,
that.
I have. Yeah,
okay. You have.
I have, and I can tell you that. And it's this whole mum chic.
Can I say I hated Emma Hayes' outfit on Saturday too? It was
the
giving
blue.
Liz Truss.
Liz Truss. She's in her Liz Truss era. Oh, God. But yeah, Bon Pastor, mum chic, like-for-like replacement going into Chelsea, blonde for blonde, has to be done. Anyway, yeah, let's talk about Leon's comeback.
Yeah, but then I was like, wow, we've got a manager who can come back from two goals down. it was a weird game. PSG do make me laugh because I just think they're kind of fun the way they're like, okay, give the ball to Baltimore or Chawinga and go brr and find Katoto in the penalty area.
Run to the byline as fast as you can and then cut it back as soon as possible.
I thought Leon, to be fair, like, Hegerberg's not available, Lusselmeer's not available. They clearly, I think, early on in the game, well, throughout the game, like really lacked like a good box presence. Mm. And I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen Diani used as the nine. We've obviously seen her do that for France and PSG in the past. And I felt like that was kind of why, for all the sort of like possession, we just had to have all these speculative pot shots because like there was just no movement in the area at all. And that's the opposite of what PSG want to do. Katoto, I thought, was brilliant. It's so good to see her, like, really back at her best, despite the fact that some of Leon's defending was just truly
both,
atrocious.
Both teams' defending was so poor.
Yeah. But PSG are always rubbish at defending.
Also, I just feel like, what's happened to Wendy Renard? I'm just really getting a little bit queasy about some of her latter years of football.
I mean, she struggled for a while,
yeah.
I think.
It's sad to see. I mean, I hate to say it, but some of the two defensive legends of world football, Lucy Bronze and Wendy Renard, are really like clinging on for dear life at this point.
Yeah. Although for the second goal, I was also like, why is Basha playing her so far onside? Mm. Because that was like, it was kind of stupid because Renard had almost stepped out and then not managed to make the challenge. But I was like, okay, if everyone stepped out, like, you need to go as well.
The shape was all over the place.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, and then PSG could have had a couple more, to be honest. But then, yeah, it was a classic I enjoyed. You know when people talk about a match of the day where they'll show you something like innocuous and you're like, why are they showing me this? And it's like, oh, it's going to come really important. The DAZN version was Amal Madjari coming on.
Yes.
And it's like, if you don't know what happens, you're like, okay, why are they showing me this random substitution?
Why do I care?
And I mean, it's kind of almost... The 6 minutes were so bonkers in terms of like everything that happened. The Diani shot obviously sort of trickles in, and it's kind of funny because that's Katoto had sort of two of those where they both just trickled wide, like similar kind of positions where she's just sort of getting her toe on it. The Dumonet goal is obviously just like fantastic.
And reminded me a lot of the Cuthbert goal. The sort of drop of the shoulder she has to do and the space she has to create in the finish was very similar, like almost having to do quite a lot of work still.
But again, the PSG defending on that was totally bizarre. I don't know who they thought was like sort of trying to mark who. And then, yeah, you get that Madjari finish where, you know, the way she lets the ball run through her legs is like gorgeous.
But it was like slow motion the way it dropped into the corner. And De Almeida's defending one-on-one with Horan, where she's sort of like trying to read the ball and the bounce and then falls over, tries to pretend that she's injured. Horan then falls over. The final goal was so calamitous. It was proper slapstick football because you've got about three bodies on the ground by the time that Madjari gets her shot off. And then it's like, oh my God, PSG, how have you done this?
Yeah, I know. And it is kind of crazy. The thing is, from a PSG perspective, I'm like, this is like what, from the way you play, this is kind of what you invite, because it's, yeah, like I think the NWSL comparison is very apt because like you're constantly looking to generate transition moments, and with the attacking players you've got, it makes perfect sense, and it's like exciting and fun. But the reality is if you do that, then you can't like sort of hold on to a lead because you're still constantly like looking to, you know, you've not got the players who are going to be able to keep control of the ball. It's a weird one because obviously if PSG had just lost like 1-0 to Lyon, which is what the scoreline is equivalent to, and we're going back to Paris, you'd probably think, well, they've not got a bad chance. But the nature of it is so mentally like draining. And this feeling, I guess, that like, because, you know, obviously in the most recent league game, again, PSG are 1-0 up, and then Lyon get this like Elise de Almeida like semi-free cone goal at the end of the game. And it just must be this constant feeling of like, no matter what you do, no matter how you play, like Lyon always find a way.
That's what I was going to say. Does it always feel like, because they are sort of masters of their own downfall, this is as far as their race is always going to run? I know so much of it is always going to be how they do against Lyon. And it's unfortunate they have to play Lyon in the semi-final of the Champions League as well. But still, it feels like this is their max. And even though they were 2-0 up with 10 minutes to go and got themselves in such a position, like you say, now on reflection, chucking away that lead, it feels like, I don't know if you guys can ever get beyond this.
I will say, though, to defend PSG, for a team that is so bonkers, the fact that they consistently reach a stage of... I think this is like their fourth semi-final in the last five seasons.
Well, that's what I mean. What? Like, it's a block.
But that's crazy. Like, that's a crazy run. Like, when you think of like how often Arsenal have made the Champions League semi-final, how often Manchester City, you know, teams that we hold up as being like much more well-run, much better than PSG in terms of like the quality of players they've got, the style of football they play. There is something about like PSG as well. And I know what you mean, that it's kind of like they always fall at that sort of semi-final hurdle. And maybe that's similar to like Chelsea to a certain extent as well, where they can constantly get to the latter stages of these competitions, but struggle when they reach a final or have to come up against the very, very best teams. But yeah, I was just sort of like reflecting on it, and I'm like, PSG are kind of crazy, but I'm like, I respect it because they always manage to like push through at least to this point.
Do you think some of that though is this conversation we had earlier in the season, which is if you've got that many good individual players, you can sort of muddle your way through without and play, I guess, their you know, transition counter-attacking with that speed is something that's always going to pay off with goals. But
well, I think what's fun, I guess, is maybe it's less about, I mean, they do have high quality players, obviously, but you know, you're still talking about a team that sells pretty much their best player every year to Lyon, you know, and that happened with Diani. Chiwenga's fantastic and is having an amazing season, and like, I adore her, but you're talking about someone like they picked up who was at Inter Milan last year, who again, like absolutely killed it. But like, in terms of like global player quality, I don't think they're necessarily like really like seriously up there. You know, and again, like Katoto's amazing, but she's probably like the only one who you're like, oh, like that's like a serious, like when she's on it, like top five player in the world potentially.
But then if you're in a position and think about how we talked about Barcelona just now, if you're in a position where you've got such a good finisher, she's going to gobble up any chance she gets. And that's why I think they do so well, is obviously she was out for a very long time with her ACL injury. So, you know, they still did well without her. But I mean, she just finishes everything, which I think is so impressive because they really didn't have a lot to work with in that game on Saturday, but she took her chances, and that's like the battle, right?
No, for sure. And I think also maybe part of the reason they then do well in these latter stages is because they play such a different style of football to how lots of the other top European teams want to play.
And that would be really interesting if they did get through to the final against Chelsea or Barcelona. Matching up against that could be extremely chaotic and enjoyable to watch.
For sure. And I would say, you know, until probably when the Chelsea semi-final against Barcelona last year, like PSG probably had one of the most impressive like two-legged displays against Barcelona in recent history in that semi-final in 2021. So yeah, I mean, a Chelsea-PSG final would be very funny, I think. But yeah, like, I don't know. I guess I just feel like maybe because we laugh at them because they're so silly, it's easy to overlook that actually kind of what they achieve when you compare, you know, again, Real Madrid would be a fantastic example of like a team who are like clearly second best to the best team in their country. But like Real Madrid, like they're awful. They can't get out of a group stage.
Oh, they're constant flops.
So I think, you know, more respect on chaotic PSG's name.
No, I get, they're very fun to watch.
Yeah, exactly.
Although some of their games are so poor in quality for about 70 minutes, but then you have those sparks of brilliance that keep you hooked in, and then the chaos makes it fun as well because you can never quite know what some of their defenders are going to do or where
they are.
They're
never not entertaining. Yeah, I would agree 100%. With that.
100%. I also thought Diani was absolutely rattled. They did a good job of rattling her, obviously former player. She got booked not long before she managed to get that goal. And I think because she got the first goal in the comeback, she celebrated like fairly hard. But if it had been the equaliser, oh my God, he would have been shirts off in the crowd. So there was no love lost. Like PSG were definitely deliberately shaking her up a little bit. And I think it did really rattle her and kept her quiet for so much of the game, and it worked. But then she was just really good at taking that one chance that came her way, which then sparked the comeback. But it was interesting to see these kind of little individual battles go down.
Yeah, and I think from an English perspective, it's easy to like not really take in like how crazy the Lyon PSG rivalry is, and therefore like what a fun Champions League semi-final. Like if there was like a Chelsea Arsenal Champions League semi-final, I think firstly Twitter would explode.
Oh my God, I don't want to know.
But it is that, like, it's that level for like those teams and those fans, in that it's, you know, okay, Lyon come out on top much more than PSG. And I guess you could argue that similarly, in terms of like trophies won over recent years, Chelsea have that edge over Arsenal. But then in terms of the individual games, there's always that like back and forth needle. And I think, yeah, I mean, I think generally there was a lot, obviously, of feeling going into the Champions League, because like Arsenal weren't there, Wolfsburg weren't there. Then you got teams like Bayern going out of the group stage, that it was like a bit meh. But I think the two semi-finals we had this weekend were so much fun.
Hey, shout out UEFA in general. Men's and Women's Champions League over the course of the
it's
last
hitting
week.
It's good this year.
Wow, I was moved. We had so many goals. The one thing the women's semi-finals have lacked: penalty shootout. We haven't had enough penalty shootouts in the knockout stages of Women's Champions League in recent years. And we had some good pens across the past week.
I can't.
As well,
if Chelsea Barcelona goes to a penalty shootout, I don't know what I'll do.
Oh, it's good. And this Lyon PSG tie is perfectly poised. PSG will be at home for this second leg in front of probably a pretty big crowd at Parc des Princes. So the ultras are going to be there with their flares. It's going to be maybe a little bit hostile, a little bit spicy. I can't wait. I think it's going to be a really, really interesting second leg. But I want to just go back to that Bon Pastor question, because we haven't really properly digested it for you, Jesse. How do you feel about her being the next Chelsea manager? Because I don't think we've quite really seen how she is as a coach. And I think it's hard to read at Lyon, because they are these sort of like French Galacticos that muddle their way through the Champions League at times. And I mean, certain in terms of managing personalities, it's a hell of a challenge at Lyon, a very international side as well. But I don't think I could put my finger on like what her strengths and what her weaknesses are.
Yeah, I don't love her tactically. I often find Lyon like quite a poor watch, to be honest. And I think regardless of the comeback, that was also true in this match. I understand the preference from Chelsea to pick a manager who has played at the highest and managed at the highest level, who's won a lot of things, who has dealt with those personalities, like you said. One thing I find intriguing, and probably this is the thing that concerns me the most, is I don't love her inability, or the question marks over her ability, maybe I should say, to develop and bring players through. Now, I know she worked at the Lyon Academy for a while, but when you're looking at that Lyon team, I do kind of feel like they've really struggled to renew themselves. You know, you're talking about sort of Renard, for example. You know, that feels like a player who I understand that's like, she's very iconic, but like maybe you should be being able to start to like sort of look to your academy and bring through younger players as options. I know Damaris is like the notable young player who's come into that team. And I think you're always going to have examples of younger players who get through. But in terms of players, like obviously Mallard's ended up at Manchester United on loan. Vicky Besho, I think she's gone hot and cold. And like part of that is just the reality of younger players. They're going to have
good and bad moments. Would you say?
Yeah, Selma Basho, obviously. But I think kind of her real rise to the top sort of, again, like I think she's just a very, very good player. So I don't know. It, for me, that's like the thing where there's definitely things you can point to and say, well, she's worked in the academy, so she's worked with younger players, and there are younger players in that Lyon team. But like, kind of like what you're saying, I don't know how much I feel like that Lyon team's really like renewed over the past couple of years. And I just think it's interesting and it's fit because Chelsea have a lot of like prime age players. So to that extent, I'm like, does it matter? But when you look at Chelsea's sort of transfer policy over recent years, there's been a lot of focus on younger players. And there's a number of younger players who are both either Chelsea Academy or have been signed from elsewhere who are sort of dotted out on loan who might, you know, potentially be coming into the club next year. You've got players who are at the club already when you look at people like Agibiv Jones, Michael Hamano. I don't know. That for me is like what I think will be interesting to see if it develops. But also, it's a crazy job. There are strengths and weaknesses with every single manager who's been linked to the job. There were potentially better candidates, in my opinion. There were potentially worse candidates. I think it's going to be an interesting adventure.
I can't wait. I can't wait to come along for the ride.
I can't wait to see what kind of Chelsea blazer they make for her.
The WSL next season is going to be loads of fun. In this post-Emma Hayes world, I don't know what kind of chaos we're going to get, but we need some characters that are going to take on the mantle, the drama.
And I do think she'll be up for that.
Do you think so?
Everyone says she's quite fun.
Is her English good?
Yeah. She speaks fluent English.
Oh, that's good to know because my French is not up to it.
Can you imagine if we had to do all the press conferences in French?
Oh my God, I would really struggle.
Wow, but Becky Taylor-Gill at every Chelsea press conference.
Translated the counter-press translator.
Oh my God,
room.
Yeah.
Me on my Duolingo. Yeah. Being like, beep, beep. Anyway, we're good. We'll be back on Thursday, obviously, to kind of look ahead to those two massive second legs. And also talk a little bit about title race because we haven't had time today to talk about the WSL. But hey, City now top by 3 points.
Can I just shout out how funny it is watching Jess Park fall over the hoardings for the Leila Wahabi goal? That was my highlight of the weekend. That really cracked me up.
And actually a fun little preview of the FA Cup final between Manchester United and Spurs.
Oh, I really enjoyed that game.
That 2-2 draw, I think, shows a lot about what we might expect at Wembley, which should be a good match, good occasion. And it's a shame because there isn't a whole lot to play for in the last few weeks of this season because Bristol City are nearly gone. West Ham didn't beat City, so they're still clinging on for dear life, but it doesn't look great. Arsenal are guaranteed to have that third Champions League qualifier spot. So really, it's now just the battle between City and Chelsea.
I think also right now, that stuff will only feel fun again once the Champions League stuff's out the way. Because obviously it's still interesting and like, you know, City did well to like score that many goals and like push on. But you don't really get the sense of like it being a title race when Chelsea aren't playing WSL games, I think. Like, do you know, I don't know, just like the fact that I didn't sit down to watch Chelsea play in the WSL this weekend meant that even the City thing, you're just like, I can't really understand this because it's kind of meaningless until Chelsea play their games in hand.
Well, we also know that there's going to be, you know, Chelsea do so well when they're chasing. So it's like, you always take it with a pinch of salt as well. Because you're like, well, until Chelsea play those chasing games, I'm not going to think about it. Anyway, we'll be back on Thursday. We'll check in with Jilly to see if she's alive. And we'll see you then.